We've begun, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Welcome, everyone, all my loyal listeners, to another episode of Movie Madness. Today's a very special episode because I have a very special guest. I'm coming from my new studios, high above downtown Buffalo, where I can overlook the waterfront. And joining me, I'm going to say your name, but you can correct me because I'm bad with last names, but that's okay because I have a tough last name. Colin Dabrowski.
That is wrong.
Oh.
It's Dabkowski.
Dabkowski. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea how to pronounce your name either, but I'm going to take a stab at it.
Go ahead. I'd like to hear it.
Jason Pamush.
That is also incorrect, but that is one of the more creative. I usually get like Pomodowski or Pomahorse, but no, it's Pomiatlosh.
Pomiatlosh.
Yes.
Okay. That's not bad.
It's also Polish. I mean, obviously, you're part Polish, right?
Yeah, a quarter.
A quarter.
The best quarter.
Oh, okay.
Maybe not. I don't know if it's the best or the worst.
No, I welcome for being on the show. You, your backstory, so we let everyone know, you used to be arts critic. Were you a critic? You criticize stuff, right? Arts critic for the Buffalo, the paper of record in Buffalo, New York.
Yes, the Buffalo News.
Oh, yeah, the Buffalo News, actually where we are recording, which I consider the fifth floor cafeteria of my studio. It's abandoned now.
It's more of a cafetorium, right?
Yeah, probably. I mean, nothing's going on. The kitchen's pretty abandoned. I think I saw some rats in there. I think someone's squatting in the kitchen right now. But they're quiet, so it's fine.
It's all good.
No, I mean, the fifth floor. I mean, actually, the cafetorium is very... We are overlooking the fine HSB. I think it's all secretly owned by Pagula now. I think he probably bought it all.
Yeah, I think he secretly owns this building and all of us in some way, shape, or form that we just don't know about yet.
Well, yeah, I think he's probably going to battle it out, some like a billionaire death match with him and Warren Buffett.
Yeah, at some point it has to end that way. Who do you think would win?
Oh, you mean if they actually, both of them, like actually physically fought? I think Warren Buffett would die of a heart attack. Like, I think his, like, Pagula's strategy would be like rope-a-dope and then just like wear him out until he
sure
died.
Yeah, absolutely,
because I think he's in a little better shape because his wife's a little young. I mean, I know obviously Buffett as a billionaire has a younger wife too, but I think Pagula's wife is younger.
Warren Buffett also eats McDonald's egg and cheese sandwiches every morning for breakfast. So
is that true?
Yeah, I watched a documentary about him, and he stops at the same McDonald's every morning depending on how the market is. He buys, like, the fancy version of the sandwich, and if the market is bad, he buys, like, the simple version. Saves himself, like, 40 cents.
Oh, so, like, McDonald's people know, like, the market's bad that day if he orders, like, the cheap sandwich, and they gotta, like, adjust their portfolios accordingly?
I don't understand rich people, which is the point, I guess, of that story.
Yeah, you know what? I don't believe documentaries anymore because I just don't believe. I'm at the age where I don't believe anything anymore, and I feel like they, especially a billionaire, can really set the narrative the way he wants. Like, he wants, he lives in the simple house in Nebraska, or is it Omaha? Whatever. Who cares? But I feel like he's not a normal dude, no matter what. When you have that much money, you're just not a normal person.
Yeah, he certainly, I mean, I work for him, so... let's just get this out of the way. He's the greatest person that has ever lived.
Oh, for sure.
And an American hero. That being said, like, he has this whole public persona where he drives an old Buick. He eats at McDonald's, etc. But he's like one of the richest men on planet Earth. So it's a little bit of a PR kind of thing, I think.
Right.
He's folksy.
And to give him the benefit of the doubt, though, he did make his money. Probably the most honest way is through the stock market manipulation. Like, he actually honestly made it. Like, Pagula, like, people give him a pass, but he fracked. He, like, set people's water on fire. Like, we don't even know what fracking does, right? That could open the door to the seventh dimension.
Yeah, it could be, the worst thing that has ever happened. I think it literally causes earthquakes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and Bill Gates, like, literally squashed probably thousands of software, like, tiny software companies on his way to making his billions, because he's like, no good. Microsoft will license everything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, however, nobody makes billions and billions of dollars without committing some sort of dishonesty, I think, in the world.
Right.
Whether that's, like, legalized through the stock market or whether it's just outright chicanery. but that's a little deep. I feel like.
Well, I mean, that's because we have this new thing in America, like, oh, we should love billionaires because they make jobs. But no, like, Jeff Bezos is not a good, like, Bill Gates is not a good person. I don't care how, oh, because he gives back billions of dollars, but he still has so much money. That's like me giving away $5 every day.
Well, I mean, you have to buy into this whole supply side thing. You have to be like a Reaganite to believe that, you know, a billionaire will ultimately benefit society, even if it's Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which has like will have the bulk of the Gates fortune. You have to believe that they know better than us, and they're going to make the right decisions with all their money, which I think is a dubious thing to think.
They won't, though. Yeah, that's like, yeah, I won't. Mean, and this country was built on like railroad or whether, what's the steel guy? What's that guy's name?
Carnegie.
Yeah, like they had all the billions, right? Because they like the one guy that, but it's like that movie, No Country for Old Men. What's the one where he's in the, throws a guy in the shaft over the milkshake and like the well?
I don't know that one.
You never saw that
one? Oh, There Will Be Blood?
Yeah, There Will Be Blood. Yeah, like, uh-huh. Like that's how billionaire, like they just want, like there's a psychological disorder where you feel like you need all this money.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Of course I say that as a person that has no money.
Well, I think it's nice though that Bezos bought the Post and he did great things with it. That Gates Foundation money is going to charity, and that Warren Buffett is donating the bulk of his fortune to philanthropy. But it all goes back to this notion that like they know better,
right?
And whereas like the competing notion with that would be like, well, let's have a different tax system and let's redistribute, you know, which is essentially, you know, socialist way of thinking. So that's why we're in this place we're in the country where you're either a socialist who wants to destroy American values, or you're a billionaire, you know, and there's nothing in between.
Right. I mean, that's, well, America's always a place of extremes.
Yeah.
But or take even Jay Leno, comedian, who was great, was the greatest comedian, or like, you know, one of the best comedians before he took the Tonight Show. But he has a hangar full of cars. Like, you can't even drive all those cars. Like, right. What's the point?
You don't need it. You don't need
it. And he says he doesn't even touch his stand-up. Well, so then start, I don't know, start a foundation for homeless cats.
I'm sure he probably has some sort of foundation.
I know.
Foundation,
I think that's
right?
What his wife does. But, I mean, after a while, I mean, it is like people are like, oh, you know, like it's that somehow they got us to believe. Well, it's like rich people got us to believe in the interest. What interests them is best for everyone. Like horse racing. Like, hey, we're so rich, we own these million-dollar horses, and guess what? You come down, and you pick which one might win. You can win, like, a tenth of the money that it's worth. and guess who gets the rest? I do, but it's in your interest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's such a joke. Or even sports now, because you're a big sport. I know you're big into
sports.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm a sports expert, actually.
We'll get to that. But no, like sport, like NFL, like obviously anything that a rich get, like they own billions of dollars, and they say sometimes they lose money, but they're too smart. They wouldn't be into something they lost money in. So they get us to root for their team. I mean, our home team, right?
Right.
To buy their jerseys, but they profit the most. So I feel like we're just helping them out. Like it's the interest of billionaires for us to continue to like sports.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no reason somebody who built like a four or five or whatever billion-dollar fracking industry would buy a team to lose money on. I mean, it is all about the money and the property development and stuff like that. All this One Buffalo stuff, I think, might be a little beside the point. It's very good PR, though, you know, but really it's about the bottom line. Which, so they want to build winning teams because the more you win, the more it accrues to your benefit financially. And that's also good for the city psychologically. But no, they just want to make a buck. They're not really, you know, necessarily on the same wavelength as the fans.
Right. And I'm saying there's nothing I do like sports. And yeah, I mean, it is a good or a distraction. But I mean, you just shouldn't be into it so much where it affects your life. I mean, go to a, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Because it's not in your best interests. Because it's in the interest of a billionaire.
It's funny somebody who works in the sports department would have that opinion.
Well, I see things how they are.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, here's the funny thing. I mean, you since you love sports, but working working in the sports department actually can make you kind of hate sports.
Yeah, I know
because
that.
Because because we have a deadline, right? And a lot of times, like if the Sabres have a 9:30 game, and we need it or whatever. If it goes late, we don't want overtime. Or if it goes in overtime,
yeah,
we don't care who wins. Just win so we can get it out of the paper and we can just all go home. Like, at the end of the day, that's what all anybody in the middle class wants. You know, like they say, police officers, they just want to get home at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's what anybody wants. That's what we want.
I think so. I mean, I think it might be different if you asked Mike Harrington or Lance or whatever what they wanted, because they love – they have these amazing jobs where they get to go out do what – ostensibly they love to do.
Yeah, but they don't have to. They're not.
But
the
I think there's a part of them that's like, oh, like another shootout, you know, like.
Well, yeah.
So, but yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, I certainly am sitting at my computer refreshing Google, being like, when the heck is this game going to end? Because I don't like this and I want to leave.
Oh, and I have all the sympathy in the world for Harrington, because there's only so many synonyms. Who covers the Buffalo Sabres? There's only so many words you can say for sucks. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and he's found all of them. He's very creative with it.
Like, this is an awful team. Another horrible loss. Like, you know, it's like, that guy does have my sympathy.
Yeah, absolutely.
If, if you approach him and you wonder, or if you see him on Twitter and you wonder why he's such a grouch, that's why. Covering the Sabres for 12 years will do, for 20 years.
They would do that to anybody.
Yeah,
I mean, the happiest person in the world would be miserable after that.
Gandhi would be mad.
Probably.
Gandhi would be like, fuck this team.
I actually, like, out of all the sports, I like hockey the most. I don't know why, because it's kind of like the like scrappy, more Rust Belt seeming of the sports that we have here. I don't really know. I mean, it's just, I like it better than the NFL because it's not this big, totally corrupt enterprise.
Not yet. Well, that's because the NFL is sort of second-tier sports, though. I mean, you know, they're only playing in front of, well, they have more games, so they're playing in front of 30,000 people as opposed to 70,000 people. And the salaries aren't, I mean, they're all millionaires, but they're not quite on par with the NFL or baseball.
Exactly. And I guess they're, as a whole, they're a lot younger, right?
Well, yeah. If you look at their draft, they're all like 19 skinny-year-old. Who can't even do like pull-ups. And they have like, when Eichel first came to town, I don't want to call him like Pizza Face, but he had some acne problems. He could have done a commercial or two.
You don't want to call him Pizza Face, but you just did.
Yeah, that was the rude, the backdoor way of being rude. Well, if you see photos of him, he could have been making your sub at Subway, as opposed to like being a great athlete that he is.
Right. He was like the teenage like character on The Simpsons.
Yeah. Like his voice probably cracked every now and then.
But, you know, that sort of makes you want to root for them because it's like, oh, look at these kids. They're just trying to do their best.
Well, yeah, you know? I mean, it's...
They don't seem as jerky as NFL players.
Well, I don't... They probably weren't, since hockey isn't as big, like, I think a lot of NFL players were probably coddled. Like, if you could, you know, if you have that kind of ability, you were coddled, like, you were just a douche from elementary school.
Absolutely.
Like hockey is probably maybe a little more like, oh, I might make it, I might not. Mm-hmm. Like you remember Mary Jo Monahan, another fine sports reporter who's no longer with us, with the paper. I think she's still alive.
Yeah.
But she has great stories about I mean, Gronk was a douche, and I mean, you think that guy's a douche now. He was.
I do.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Oh, he was a douche in high school. Like we here at the news, we have scholar athlete photos, and they come in, and I guess he just came right off the elevator and was like, where's all the girls? You know, just like, entitled.
He was like already the
superstar when he was playing on the basketball team. Like before the game, he'd hang off the rim and just grab his crotch and just act all around like nothing. The world is mine.
Yeah,
get out of my way. I'm a.
That's the worst.
I'm a 6'6" caveman.
Yeah, like he's kind of like the perfect embodiment of like everything I don't like about the NFL or sports in general.
Right.
Like those kids in high school who were just like completely entitled and like thought that they owned the whole world. Yeah. Well, not a fan.
Well, that is the dark side
and
of sports,
I guess. And yet I spend, you know, 60% of my time now editing stories about that.
Oh, cruel irony. What did you do in a past life?
In a past life, I was the arts critic at the Buffalo News, covering Buffalo's theater community and their visual art community, which is huge and has a lot of interesting stuff going on, but does not, let's just say, have the same cachet as sports or even high school sports. For reasons unknown to me, it is viewed as kind of ancillary, although I think it's very central to Western New York's identity and economy. So I covered that for 12 years, which was absolutely great. Dream job. Loved it. And then last year got moved over to the digital desk, which is also interesting in its own way. But, you know, it's been a a tough transition, I guess I would say, especially because it involves a lot of sports, which is not really my bag, you know.
Well, it's but not your it's, background.
No, but I totally understand. It's like psychologically totally important to Western New York, and it is like a huge deal that deserves to be covered, and we have a great sports department too. So it's nice to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, shifting from culture to sports is a really, there are lots of parallels actually that people might not immediately see between sports and art. So that's, you know, that's interesting. And I often explored that in my work. But yeah, so that was my past life, and my current life is kind of in a state of limbo, I guess I would say.
Well, talk about entitled theater kids. Now those kids are douches. Always running around, yelling lines at each other. I saw them in high school.
I know. They're the same now because I'm substitute teaching now. And I was at a school last week where they're doing Sister Act the Musical.
Oh.
And all the people in the show were in their Sister Act t-shirts and so like into themselves and the fact that they were going to win all these awards and they're the best musical theater performers in history. And they're like 16 years old, you know? So like, yeah, theater kids have like crazy egos. And actors, professional actors have crazy egos that are like interestingly very similar to sports, you know, sports players' egos.
Well, if you're a great singer, I mean, I guess if you're good at something, it gives you an ego, right?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has an ego. I shouldn't say that's like necessarily a bad thing. But here's the thing that I have that, like most, as a stand-up comedian, that I don't recommend because it's kind of a toxic mix. Is that one side I do have like a huge narcissistic ego, like, yeah, haha, I'm so funny, I should make strangers laugh. But then on the other end of the spectrum, I have sometimes crippling low self-esteem,
yeah,
which makes for a good stand-up comic, but not a good person.
No, absolutely terrible human being, but like hilarious dude.
Yeah, but it's really hard to like. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody.
aren't the best stand-up comics all like that though? They have this like really like disparate like mix of insane confidence and like crippling anxiety and self-loathing.
Well, yeah, and it's really hard to get through the day. That's why a lot of them do die young.
Yeah, but that's like your outlet for that is on stage, right?
Well, yeah. If you're successful, it's good. If you're not successful, it's even worse. But
oh, yeah, you're just digging a deeper hole for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, well, let's talk about this. So the art scene keeps growing, right, here in Buffalo? It's great.
It's truly amazing what has happened to the arts here over the last, like, 15 years or so. It's just ballooned. And I think it was, like, there's a lot of reasons for it. It's just that Buffalo's so cheap to live in compared to all these other cities that
it's starting
are becoming
to get worse. I mean, everywhere is worse now. Like, rent's a little, or I mean, housing. Well, I guess we have the hottest housing market, but
right. So, rents and stuff and property values are going up here. But, like, think about somebody who's trying to make it in Brooklyn. You can't afford to eat and live in an apartment and do art. You know, it's just impossible. Right. So, all of us Rust Belt cities are benefiting from that. And I think that started maybe 15, 20 years ago, even. And that's part of the reason why we've seen this like huge renaissance in culture here. Like I think there's 25 professional or semi-professional theater companies.
Really?
By my last count, there's 175 galleries and museums, and there's this crazy underground scene. It's kind of like comedy too in Buffalo that is bigger than a city like Buffalo should have. And there's something weird in the water. There's something strange going on to cause this like this level of cultural activity to happen here. So it's an amazing time for culture in Buffalo. It has been since, like, I would say, like, since the late 90s, it's been on this upward trajectory that has yet to plateau.
Is there, like, a father of the like, who's big in the, like, for the comedy scene, there's Kristen Becker. She actually helped bring Helium to Buffalo, and she started when there was only, like, one open mic in Buffalo as opposed to, like, four. But is there, like, who's some influential theater people in Buffalo? Are there any of those?
Yeah, definitely. I would say, like, one of the most influential is Anthony Chase, who writes about theater. He doesn't own a theater company or anything like that, but he's been the sort of the glue that holds the community together for a long time. And he's been super important to the growth of theater locally. And then there's the old guard, like Saul Elkin. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
No.
He runs Shakespeare in Delaware Park.
Oh, well, I know Shakespeare in the Park, obviously.
Yeah. That's which is, you know, 40-some years old. And he's kind of like the old guard that everybody looks up to. Then there's Vincent O'Neill at the Irish Classical, and he's helped kind of raise the bar theater quality-wise in Buffalo. And another guy named Randy Kramer, who runs Musical Fair out in Amherst, which has become better and better over its, like, 20 years of existence. So there's not, like, one leader, like a Kristen Becker of theater in Buffalo,
right.
But it's this sort of constellation of people and writers like Anthony who have helped glue it together and build it up as a community. Plus the Buffalo News, you know, if we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit. Like, we're one of the only regional papers that still reviews, you know, over 100 local theater productions every year. And that contributes as well to the vitality of the scene, which is it's totally crazy how we have this many professional theater companies in a city of this size.
I didn't know we had that many.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, yeah, the news does what we can, I guess, as far as... Well, there's... Because what happened to all the independent papers? Well, Jamie... the Art Voice went nuts, right? Did Jamie go nuts?
I don't know. I don't want to psychoanalyze Jamie Moses. I think that's a losing game.
Enough said there.
Yeah. Sorry, Jamie, if you're listening. Don't try to get me fired again. Didn't work last time.
Is there some sort of personal feud there?
I have personal feuds. I try to maintain as many personal feuds as possible.
Keeps you going.
Yeah, helps me wake up in the morning. But that went kind of... It didn't go belly up. It still actually exists as an online publication.
Right, but I don't... They probably review theater, though, right? Do they?
They don't. Anthony Chase used to write for Art Voice, and he was kind of their anchor when it came to theater coverage. The public doesn't have much theater coverage to speak of. The public is our other alt-weekly.
And that is an actual physical paper still, right? Or is it just...
It is. Oh, okay. It stopped being printed for a minute there a couple months ago, but it's back in print now.
Because I know I did actually meet Jamie once, and I swear it was like it was a weird... I was going to do some writing for him, and it was... when I went into his office, it was like his face was half shaded. He was in the dark corner.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
He kind of mumbled. And I was just like,
yeah,
this... I don't know if I want to work with this guy.
Yeah, he was like created like by Stan Lee to destroy young writers' dreams.
Oh, is that what he is? He's like
know.
A villain.
I'm not a fan. I mean, let's put it that way.
Well, the Art Voice has been around. I don't know what happened. Yeah, like all the... There was another... Oh, The Beast for a while, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know about... I guess maybe Buffalo can't support... I mean, technically, we had the Courier, like, I don't know what, in the 30s, the 50s. I don't know when that went belly up. We had two newspapers here in Buffalo. And then, I guess, Buffalo... A lot of people fled because things got real bad here in the 70s with our... Like, we discussed it, like, our 16-term mayor, Jimmy Griffin.
Yes.
And only, like... Well, that's why we called the Rust Belt. Like, Bethlehem Steel closed. And, you know, we weren't like, Buffalo wasn't known as an arts city. It's blue-collar.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with it. I don't say that as an insult. But, you know, we had the bill and then, like, Bethlehem Steel, and then, like, a lot of people fled. So I think that probably helped the Courier. Like, just one newspaper survived.
Yeah.
The Buffalo News.
Right. The Courier went out of business in 82.
Oh, hey.
After a war with the Buffalo News.
Which was it a war? Was it, like, a paper
war? Classic old newspaper war. Warren Buffett bought the News in the late 70s and with the express purpose of putting the Courier out of business.
Really?
And did just that.
Well, he's a man of his word.
Yeah, and, you know, had that sort of, you know, one newspaper town hold on things because, the News, like many metro papers, was just a money printing machine, you know, from the time well before Warren Buffett bought it. We're kind of this, you know, the media is in a very difficult spot right now.
Well, I mean, the newspaper business in general is, I mean, 5 years from now, I'm sure most papers will probably be all digital or like a semi-weekly, not a daily paper.
Yeah, I think it'd be amazing if Buffalo still had a daily paper in 5 years, even more amazing if it still had a daily paper in 10.
I mean, because the people just get news off. I mean, it's just the way things, it's called technology. It's not anything. Well, I mean, it might be poor managing. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's just like, there's better models out there, I guess. Just like Uber's better than taxi cabs. Just,
right.
You got to roll with it. I mean, there'll always be a place for journalists or critics or writing. So people shouldn't get worried about it. It's just how it's delivered.
I think you're totally right. There's a lot of gloom and doom, and some of it's really justified, especially really small communities whose papers are have gone out of business, and there's nobody to, literally nobody to cover city council or whatever. That's where the real crisis is, and there is a crisis on the horizon in places like Buffalo too. But there will be a new model that comes up to replace it. We just don't know what it's going to look like, and it's going to be a painful period, probably a pretty painful 5 to 10 years of figuring out what that is. And a lot more people are going to lose their jobs, and it's going to be difficult. But I do believe that like there will be a new model that comes up to replace like the old money printing sort of. I think it might look like a nonprofit, or it might look more like NPR.
Well, I think that it's a new model of where everyone can't be a billion. You know what I mean? Like whoever owns the paper is not going to be super rich, and it's just
right. And maybe it's community owned.
And despite, I mean, you should state for everyone. I mean, and as much as I rant about, I kind of hate most things.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you.
But I mean, a newspaper is vital. Reporting, should say, is vital.
And absolutely.
A reporter is not the enemy of the state, no matter what Donald Trump says.
It's not what?
The enemy of anyone. A reporter is not the enemy of the state or enemy of anybody.
No, and that rhetoric is extremely harmful to working journalists.
Yeah, like, I mean, he usually nails everything else, but he's really wrong on that.
Yeah, I was surprised because I'm, you know,
he's a sharp guy. He's
100% in line with what he says. Maybe
right.
Not. But yeah, like reporting, and that's why the news... the news understands its role in the community, takes it very seriously, and like understands everybody at the news from the top down, understands like the importance of local reporting. So that's a great thing, and I think that we're engaged now in figuring out how to pay for it. We just don't know the answer yet.
I think we'll come up with it, or maybe when AI comes around, they'll come up with it. Yeah. Well, no, here's the thing: like some people don't understand. I shouldn't say everyone, but like you need to report on like a school board meeting because.
Yeah.
School board are still elected officials, and as weird as this sounds, a lot of weird people that want to get in politics that are, let's just say Nazis start at the lowest level, which is school board. Like our fine Carl Palladino tried to get into the school board, and I think he was following those footprints.
Well, I'm just for the record not going to try to draw a comparison between Carl Palladino and Nazis. I don't think that is correct.
Right, but I mean, people with bad political views get started at the lowest. I mean, it needs to be reported what's going on everywhere so people know. Like, when things don't get mentioned, then anybody can say anything they want at what happened at meetings.
And there are people who would love to have no oversight. And that's half of what our reporters and editors do here is fight against police organizations or public boards. The Community Action Organization is just the latest example of like a publicly funded organization that wants nobody to pay attention to it, and that's like their fantasy, having no daily newspaper so that they can do whatever they want, spend the public's money in, you know, whatever illegal way they would like, and there's no reporter like Matt Spina banging on their door to like say, why are you doing this? So that's like their fantasy, this their wet dream.
Right, and Matt Spina is a very serious dude. I wouldn't want him banging on my door ever.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I don't think I've ever seen the dude smile.
I mean,
he's a very serious individual, and it's a rumor. Like sometimes when you report stuff, you get it wrong. But I mean, reporters are human.
Absolutely.
It's still an important function, or like they have this misconception, or like the Buffalo News is like some sort of all commie pinko rag. Like Rod Watson, you know, he does an editorial. He's actually a staunch Republican. A lot of people don't know.
Well, I don't know if that's true, and I wouldn't say one way or the other party
affiliation.
I'm kidding.
I know. He's not walking around in an America hat or anything.
But, I mean, he certainly has views on the Second Amendment that are totally counter to what you would call the liberal philosophy on it. And that, I think, surprises a lot of... It's very interesting what happens when Rod writes a column on race, in which he's very much aligned with the left wing. And then he'll write a column on gun rights, and people who hate him for the column on race don't know what to do with themselves because they're like, oh shoot, he's defending, you know, my right to gun ownership. So yeah, it's not as simple as it's a liberal rag or a conservative rag. Like, there are gray areas.
It's just a rag.
It's a rag. There are a lot of gray areas.
Yeah, I don't know. I think as a human, as a race, we just forget nuance. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if you like someone, or if someone's a great athlete that can run really fast, they have a hard time realizing they can kill somebody. Or if someone's really talented musically, oh man, they can't break the law, right? But like, people are very complicated.
Yeah, and that's
like you're shooting heroin right now in front of me as we're talking.
I know, and nobody would ever think that, but it's how I get through my sports shifts, you know. I have to have a strategy.
I am kidding, by the way.
But yeah, I mean, no, it's just light drugs. Not heroin. But this is the last or one of the last refuges for nuanced thinking is the American daily newspaper. And that's what's really terrifying about it going away, is that people will be left with sound bites and TV news and cable news and all these things that benefit from drawing black and white versions of reality, you know, whereas like we have the full color version here. Like we're exploring less than we used to because of resources, but we're really trying to explore all the nuances of these issues, which is something, not to get all serious and First Amendment-y, but like democracy needs to survive, you know.
But that is true. It's a scare. Like you feel like, oh, democracy can never go away, but it can be subverted in a horribly horrible way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as I think we're seeing.
And we get so easily to, like the new with the 24-hour news cycle. We got this new thing that's not even news. You know, like we have this thing that just wants to get people interacted and outraged. But like, woman went to a black waitress got a racist note from a thing.
Right.
And then, well, like, technically that's, I mean, it's not really news. It's just a customer, you know, like a customer says, I won't tip black people.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a customer being an asshole, but it shouldn't lead your newscast, you know? I mean, where it's...
Exactly. We'll do that story. Like, we have the ability to say, like, yeah, we're going to do that story, but we're going to spend 15 minutes writing a blog post about it, and then we're going to spend the majority of our time doing serious journalism.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you try to do both here, whereas like on sort of the BuzzFeed, well, that's not a good example because they do try to do journalism. So you've got like TMZ, which is just like as sensational as possible with like a little dash of reporting here and there, or you have newspapers, and it's like there's no in between. So that's, and we feel pulled in that direction. Like, we have to do the story on the racist note.
Well, you have to, because you just have to keep up, or else you would be, you know what I mean? It's like when someone starts in TV, like, everyone has to whiten their teeth because of that one person, because then everyone else has really yellow teeth.
That's a great example.
You got to follow along. Well, I mean, it's true, though. Like, TMZ does the one thing, that, you know, they do that check. They actually do make stories. Like, The Inquirer actually broke some stories, but they do checkbook, you know, journalism, where they'll just pay for the story, which technically you shouldn't, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, newspapers won't do, because it's kind of unethical and we don't have the money, but, you know.
Yeah, I've only done it like 50 or 60 times in my career, which I think is, you know, it's good.
You had to get the story. You got the story, though.
Yeah, I always get the story. But I am actually going back to cover the Albright Knox a couple days a week.
Yeah, look out for that, guys.
Yeah, so
because they're doing what, you know, we should wrap. You are a font of. I'm going to make you a semi-regular guest because we should talk about the state of the news, news reporting
industry. If I still have a job after people listen to this podcast,
I'm going to send this directly to some people.
No, we said nothing. Anything terrible?
No, we said nothing but good things. I feel like.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you for coming, and we'll talk some more. And I'll probably see you downstairs. Okay.